upset his enemies. But over the days of their voyage to the asteroid, Elverde came to the conclusion that buried deep beneath his ruthless business persona was an eager little boy who was tremendously excited at having found a new toy. A toy he intended to possess for himself. An art object created by alien hands. For an art object was what the artifact seemed to be. The family of prospectors continued to send back vague, almost irrational reports of what the artifact looked like. The reports were worthless. No two descriptions matched. If the man and woman were to be believed, the artifact did nothing but sit in the middle of a rough-hewn cavern. But they described it differently with every report they sent. It glowed with light. It was darker than deep space. It was a statue of some sort. It was formless. It overwhelmed the senses. It was small enough almost to pick up in one hand. It made the children laugh happily. It frightened their parents. When they tried to photograph it, their transmissions showed nothing but blank screens. Totally blank. As Humphreys listened to their maddening reports and waited impatiently for the IAA to organize its hand-picked team of scientists, he ordered his security manager to get a squad of hired personnel to the asteroid as quickly as possible. From corporate facilities at the Jupiter station and the moons of Mars, from three separate outposts among the asteroid belt itself, Humphrey's space systems efficiently brought together a brigade of experienced mercenary security troops. They reached the asteroid long before anyone else could, and were under orders to make certain that no one was allowed onto the asteroid before Martin Humphrey's himself reached it.
The time has come.
Elverde woke slowly, painfully, like a swimmer struggling for the air and light of the surface. She had been dreaming of her childhood, of the village where she had grown up, the distant snow-capped Andes, the warm night breezes that spoke of love.
The time has come.
It was Dorn's deep voice, whisper soft. Startled, she flashed her eyes open. She was alone in the room, but Dorn's image filled the phone screen by her bed. The numbers glowing beneath the screen showed that it was time indeed.
I am awake now, she said to the screen.
I will be at your door in 15 minutes, Dorn said. Will that be enough time for you to prepare yourself?
Yes, plenty.
The days when she needed time for selecting her clothing and arranging her appearance were long gone.
In 15 minutes, then.
Wait, she blurted. Can you see me?
No. Visual transmission must be keyed manually.
I see.
I do not.
A joke? Elverde sat up on the bed as Dorn's image winked out. Is he capable of humor? She shrugged out of the shapeless coverall she had worn to bed, took a quick shower, and pulled her best caftan from the travel bag. It was a deep midnight blue, scattered with glittering silver stars. Elverde had made the floor-length gown herself, from fabric woven by her mother long ago. She had painted the stars from her memory of what they had looked like from her native village. As she slid back her front door, she saw Dorn marching down the corridor with Humphreys beside him. Despite his slightly longer legs, Humphreys seemed to be scampering like a child to keep up with Dorn's steady, stolid steps.
I demand that you reinstate communications with my ship,
Humphreys was saying, his voice echoing off the corridor walls.
I'll dock your pay for every minute this insubordination continues.
It is a security measure, Dorn said calmly, without turning to look at the man. It is for your own good.
My own good? Who in hell are you to determine what my own good might be?
Dorn stopped 3 paces short of Elverde, made a stiff little bow to her, and only then turned to face his employer.
Sir, I have seen the artifact. You have not.
And that makes you better than me?
Humphreys almost snarled the words.
Holier, maybe?
No, said Dorn. Not holier. Wiser.
Humphreys started to reply, then thought better of it.
Which way do we go?
Evenda asked in the sudden silence. Dorn pointed with his prosthetic hand.
Down, he replied. This way.
The corridor abruptly became a rugged tunnel again, with lights fastened at precisely spaced intervals along the low ceiling. Elverda watched Dorn's half-human face as the pools of shadow chased the highlights glinting off the etched metal, like the moon racing through its phases every half-minute, over and again. Humphreys had fallen silent as they followed the slanting tunnel downward into the heart of the rock. Elverda heard only the clicking of his shoes at first, but by concentrating, she was able to make out the softer footfalls of Dorn's padded boots, and even the whisper of her own slippers. The air seemed to grow warmer, closer. Or is it my own anticipation? She glanced at Humphreys. Perspiration beaded his upper lip. The man radiated tense expectation. Dorn glided a few steps ahead of them. He did not seem to be hurrying, yet he was now leading them down the tunnel, like an ancient priest leading two new acolytes, or sacrificial victims. The tunnel ended in a smooth wall of dull metal.
We are here.
Open it up, Humphreys demanded.
It will open itself, replied Dorn.
He waited a heartbeat, then added,
Now.
And the metal slid up into the rock above them, as silently as if it were a curtain made of silk. None of them moved. Then Dorn slowly turned toward the two of them and gestured with his human hand.
The artifact lies 22.9 meters beyond this point. The tunnel narrows and turns to the right. The chamber is large enough to accommodate only one person at a time, comfortably.
Me first.
Humphreys took a step forward. Dorn stopped him with an upraised hand, the prosthetic hand.
I feel it is my duty to caution you.
Humphreys tried to push the hand away. He could not budge it.
When I first crossed this line, I was a soldier. After I saw the artifact, I gave up my life.
And became a self-styled priest. So what?
The artifact can change you. I thought it best that there be no witnesses to your first viewing of it, except for this gifted woman whom you have brought with you. When you first see it, it can be traumatic.
Humphrey's face twisted with a mixture of anger and disgust.
I'm not a mercenary killer. I don't have anything to be afraid of.
Dorn let his hand drop to his side with a faint whine of miniaturized servo motors.
Perhaps not, he murmured,
so low that Elverda barely heard it. Humphreys shouldered his way past the cyborg.
Stay here, he told Elverda. You can see it when I come back.
He hurried down the tunnel, footsteps staccato. Then silence. Elverda looked at Dorn. The human side of his face seemed utterly weary.
You have seen the artifact more than once, haven't you?
14 times, he answered.
It has not harmed you in any way, has it?
He hesitated, then replied,
It has changed me. Each time I see it, it changes me more.
You really are Doric Harbin?